and see what happens here. Welcome to Towson, if you're not from here. This is where I grew up. Friends of mine in Europe were like, have you heard about this white student union in the U.S.? And I was like, yeah, it's my hometown. So I was just up here last week protesting against the white student union, which claims that it's not racist. It just is proud of its heritage. So I was trying to think, gee, what songs do I have that tie history and war together? And I was like, pretty much the last five albums that I put out. And so I'm trying to figure out what songs to sing. But I thought I would start with an obvious one. I also didn't want to like play too many songs dealing with the Vietnam War, because that's very typical of a folk singer to do. But I have one, well, I have a few in particular, but I have one in particular that I thought would be a good one to sing, because it's about a little known thing that happened during Vietnam. And a lot of these Vietnam era songs I've written specifically for this generation of veterans and active duty military personnel to understand their history. Because when we talk about history and who history is hidden from and who it's hidden by, nowhere is that, I think, more present than within the military itself. And any war you look at, any war that you can possibly point your finger at or open a book about, you'll find soldiers who resisted it from within the militaries that were involved. You'll find soldiers who participated in revolutions against the governments that put them into war. And you'll find fraternizing among the soldiers, hanging out, whether it was soldiers from the north and south going down to the river to go swimming and share booze during the U.S. Civil War, or whether it was the soldiers of multiple armies in the Christmas Truce in 1914, right? Or anywhere else you could point at. Russian soldiers deserting the occupation of Afghanistan and fighting with the resistance, with the Mujahideen. Anywhere you can point your finger at. And one of those episodes was U.S. sailors sabotaging their own ships at the height of the Vietnam War and at the beginning of the air war, and disabling three of the five U.S. aircraft carriers that were in the combat theater in the early 70s. And this is a song I wrote about that. Come gather around your sailors, soldiers, and marines. I'll tell you about some sailors making history. The world's strongest navy was delivering the bombs from the hills of California to the swamps of Vietnam. If any of the names are inaccurate according to the situation, call me out on it later, because I get confused. But all this stuff is true otherwise. This is the one time somebody might actually be able to effectively call me out on this. It's actually a homework assignment I'm giving you. The USS Forrestal was heading off to war. Didn't make it too far, barely left the shore. Bolts and chains in the main reduction gears. Then it couldn't do much but sit right there. All hands on deck, let's give three cheers to the man who threw the wrench in the gears. Mind you, that was a metaphor. It wasn't a wrench in the gears. It was bolts and chains. They also work. Take note. Then the USS Ranger was heading off to war. Didn't make it too far, barely left the shore. Fire to the radar in the middle of the night. Fire to the Admiral's quarters, he ain't gonna fight. All hands on deck, let's give three cheers to the man who threw the wrench in the gears. Then the USS Anderson was heading off to war. Didn't make it too far, barely left the shore. A little paint scraper in the main reduction gears. And it couldn't do much but sit right there. All hands on deck, let's give three cheers to the man who threw the wrench in the gears. Again, take note, a paint scraper also works to destabilize a U.S. Navy ship. Proven by actual events. Well, Well, the world's strongest navy's got a little glitch. It needs obedient sailors flipping every switch. They sent the country's future off to fight a greedy war. So they took all their equipment and threw it overboard. All hands on deck, let's give three cheers to the man who threw the wrench in the gear. And note, I usually don't support littering into the ocean, but I do support people driving U.S. military equipment off a ship into the ocean. We'll deal with the other part in the future, but one step at a time. So, do you know that there was a very large walkout from this university on the day that the Iraq War started? Probably the largest demonstration in the history of Towson, Maryland, I would venture to say. In my understanding of what's happened here, that's true so far. And we had a lot of big events here on campus. I never went here. I just was like a high school dropout that hung out here. Still do it. So I spent a lot of time here organizing, and a lot of us from this university went down to participate in a very large demonstration in Miami in 2003 against the Free Trade Area of the Americas negotiations that were happening. And it was brutal, and a Towson student actually died on the way home of meningitis, which was pretty crazy, and it traumatized a lot of us. Not just his death, but the whole situation, the police, the weaponry, and everything that they were using. And a lot of us got pretty jaded after that within what the media called the anti-globalization movement, what we call the global justice movement. It hit me. I was like pretty disillusioned after it and thinking, man, we didn't do anything. We totally lost all this stuff. And it was in maybe 2006, I read an article, maybe 2007, by David Graeber called The Shock of Victory. And he was talking to me. He was like, you people, young anti-globalization people, why are you so hard on yourselves? Look what you've done. Look at the movement you've been part of. Look at your victories. Look at the things you've achieved. Why are you acting like you failed? And he was noting, like, the Free Trade Area of the Americas doesn't exist. You guys beat it. A whole worldwide, mostly Western Hemisphere-wide movement beat it. You were part of that. Don't knock yourself. He was like, the World Trade Organization can't even have a meeting that doesn't collapse. Like, you guys did that. You were part of that. Give yourselves credit. And it was like, oh, wow. How about that? And it hit me. Why don't I think like that? Why am I not thinking, like, what are we actually doing? Anyways, this is a song I wrote in 2011, ironically the day before Occupy Wall Street started. And I was one of those slightly young people that was like totally hating on the concept of the Occupy movement before it happened. You know, people were asking me about it and I was like, oh, whatever. Yeah, they're going to occupy Wall Street, okay. And all this stuff. And I was like unaware that potential existed, but other people were, you know. And I was humbled by it and embarrassed to come there and be like, this is so cool. How did you do this? I wrote this, but I wrote this not inspired by Occupy Wall Street. It's just ironic. I wrote this inspired by hanging out in Sweden, the night I wrote this in Sweden with a friend, talking about Victor Jara, because my friend in Sweden is Swedish, half Lebanese, named after Victor Jara, the Chilean socialist folk singer who was killed in 1973 by a CIA-backed coup in Chile. And I was just thinking about history and like, holy crap, this dude's parents chose to name him after this dead folk singer who's never going to know that this kid is now a political musician hanging out with this other political musician singing in awful Spanish Victor Jara's songs in Sweden. You know, like, there's a lot going on there, you know? And I wrote this song. It's called Today and Tomorrow. It's also inspired by that book, The Subversion of Politics by George Kostiafikas. If you ever get the chance to pick that up, that's a terrific history book. It's called Today and Tomorrow. It's best to know the worth of what you got before it's gone. But you can't let yourself get stuck, cause you're afraid you might be wrong. You're nostalgic for 68, I'm nostalgic for 99. But sometimes thinking back too much can make you close your eyes. Cause what we do today matters both today and tomorrow. History is to build something new. I don't care what you read about unless it impacts what you do. You wanna recreate 68, you wanna recreate 99. Try learning their hard lessons to reflect and then refine. Cause the good old days just suck sometimes if you ask those who were there. And the answers weren't just blowing in the wind, they were put there. Matters both today and tomorrow. But history gets simplified, passing on of time. And causes and effects sometimes take decades to define. I've seen the long shadow of 68 by the ruins of the Berlin Wall. I've seen the long shadow of 68 in Seattle. And looking back from here now, all the pieces seem to fit. Sometimes it's hard to notice the changing world when you're right inside of it. But without us, the future is a boat without a sail. Without our best attempts, we set the next ones up to fail. What we do today matters both today and tomorrow. You got a choice here. I have one more song. I could play a brand new song I wrote about Bradley Manning, or I could play a song about the Egyptian Revolution that I wrote.
Just singing fast.
The Bradley Manning song is kind of long. I'll just play that because it's brand new. I wrote it last week. Yeah. Is anybody here part of the Bradley Manning support campaign? Cool. We should talk because I now am organizing with you. As of last night. I hope to see all of you June 1st outside of Fort Meade. Court martial starts June 3rd. So, those of you who've read about the case of Bradley Manning and heard his testimony from court or heard the leaked audio from it on YouTube, something that you'll hear you'll hear a lot of things that are kind of new information to the public, but one of the things you'll hear is that one of the things that Bradley Manning was tracking as an intel operative in Iraq was abuses by the Iraqi government, the U.S.-installed, U.S.-backed Iraqi government's abuse of activists, of opposition figures, and of journalists, right? And people who were tracking the embezzlement and the hiding of tons of reconstruction money that was just getting taken off the top and the middle and most of the bottom by the Iraqi government. And you'll maybe get linked to an investigation that just got released a couple weeks ago by The Guardian, that some of the people, some of the same U.S. officials who've been sent over to Iraq specifically to train these parts of the Iraqi security state who are repressing these journalists are the same people who went and did that across Latin America in the 70s, at the end of the 70s and the 80s. The same types of training, the same types of concepts of targeting these people. So this is part of the story. And so when I wrote the song, I tied part of that in because these people are still crawling around the government. In the private sector. It's called To Keep You Silent. Solitary confinement. For who knows for how long? It's the only way to keep you silent. Oh, but your silence is strong. Skilled at torture, at terrorizing faith, you stripped your body naked to degrade and humiliate. They were so skilled.
scared of killing. Under the banner of peace, who killed 2 million in Korea and 4 million Vietnamese. I keep you in solitary confinement for who knows for how long. Those who rode through the Powder River with the machine gun and the flame, who killed Crazy Horse in prison and stormed the Philippines. Those who flew the air of the Condor dared to talk, who killed thousands in Santiago. You heard its echoes in Iraq that keep you in solitary confinement. But your silence is strong. Those who would have you die in prison and suffer this life. They act not without reason. They know there's others just like you who would push back against the killing for some future greater good, who would give of themselves willing.
First, come down to Fort Meade to support Bradley Manning. And also, if you all want any CDs, I have a couple in the other room, so after this. Thank you.